Yo, it's the Breakfast Club, bringing flavor to the game. At the Nordic, don't make days, ain't no one the same. We rocking suits and ties, making moves that defy, investing in them.
This episode is sponsored by Escrow.com, the leader in secure online transactions for domain names.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Breakfast Club, the podcast where we talk about domain investing, life, and anything in between. I'm Giuseppe, your host, and today I'm happy to have a very special guest join us, Ivan Raskazov, which is part of the Intellim team. Ivan is not just like a longtime friend. I think we've been in touch for more than 8 years, I guess. But together with Luke, he's behind some of the most interesting tools in the industry. So today we're going to explore a little bit about his journey, talk about some of the Intellim products, and also just riff about life and talk about random stuff. So with this, I really like to give a warm welcome to Ivan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Giuseppe. Thank you. Has it really been this long? I feel like we just came up with the idea for the report, for the industry report, just yesterday, and like 8 years flew by. I don't know where they went.
No, you know, like the last memory that I have with you is that you came to visit in Lisbon, and it was an unusually foggy day, and we were just walking around. It was like a night, and then you were just leaning up to this, it was kind of like a viewpoint, and you were kind of trying to get a feel from the city. And that was like the last distinctive memory of you. That goes like beyond all like the reports that we did and all the other stuff. So do you remember that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think my favorite part of that was, well, first of all, being in Lisbon, because I've never been before that, but also checking out the old Roman ruins and just seeing how layered our history is, right? Like everything is about layers, literally, in humanity and life and domain investing, trying to figure out what was there before, how did it get there, guessing at it. And, you know, so I really enjoyed that trip for sure.
All right, cool. You know, actually, like just last week, I went for the ICANN in Istanbul, and when you think about layer, that was the city that I really thought, like, wow, like here there are just so many layers, because it starts from like the Roman Empire, then the Turks came. So here we have kind of a tradition. The first question that we ask the guests is, where are you dialing from?
I'm dialing in from the beautiful, sunny, and very warm Chicago. It's around 0 degrees Celsius, which many would consider incredibly cold, which is actually great for this time of year. It's a very nice day for now, but I'm looking forward to the weather changing in about 30 minutes and a freezing rain coming down. But that's just the nature of Chicago. Otherwise, it's a beautiful place, and that's where I am based at the moment.
I'm based in Dubai. I was actually just walking down to the beach this morning. I think it's about 28 degrees Celsius. And I saw like these camels walking by. So there's this guy who just walks on the beach every morning just for tourists to get on top and just take pictures. And I wanted to come to post a picture of this guy saying winter is coming. And then everybody just like chilling out on the beach. So it's like a completely different environment.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, you can walk down the beach here, too. There are beaches here, but I'm not sure you'd want to stick around, to be honest. I mean, the wind picks up and you'll feel pretty chilly. You need a little bit of a jacket and a sweater today.
You know, you'd be crazy, but like at some point, I think it was after I talked with you, I was actually researching like what are like the top five beaches in Chicago because of the lake. Because I'm a water person. Like I love water. So I was thinking like, if I ever come to visit Ivan, then I want to find out, like, what are the beaches in Chicago? Like, so what's the deal there? Can you actually swim? Can you actually go to the beach?
You can, yeah. I mean, it's not, you know, when a lot of people think of the beach, they think of the Caribbean, for example, right? I've never been to Dubai, so I'm not really sure what the beaches look like in Dubai. I'm sure they're fabulous, like everything else. But here, they're a little bit smaller. There is sand. There is a concrete part, so people call it kind of like cement beach or concrete beach, where you could basically lay out, and that's fine. You can dive in the water. It is a little bit deceptive because the lake is more like the sea. It is a pretty large body of water and can get quite violent, so you have to be careful with the currents and things like that. Pay attention to the winds. It is actually a very serious body of water, and occasionally it doesn't make itself known. But there's an Oak Street beach here, where I am. It's a very popular kind of destination because you can see the Hancock Tower, you can see the downtown behind you, and there's still a little bit of sand. So you get a mix of everything, right? That's why people like it. North Avenue is very similar to that. After that, I really, to be honest, I'm not a beach person, so I don't really go around. You know, I don't mind kind of sitting around reading a book, but if I'm honest, I'm not a beach person. But those two tend to be popular.
All right, cool. Man, and so every time I talk to you, I almost feel like you have this love for Chicago. I think also on your Twitter, I think you say like second city is second to none or something like that.
Yes, on the Twitter account, I'm desperately trying to keep more or less kind of on the low key, but yeah, so I do love Chicago. I mean, you know, I was born in Moscow, the Soviet Union, like one of that, right? So I'm that ancient. And so it was a completely different place. We immigrated eventually to America when the Soviet Union dissolved. And so Chicago is the first place I came to. So in many ways, it's home, basically. I immigrated when I was about 11. And so it's not the only reason why I love this city. I did live around. I lived in LA kind of during the crazy part of my life, which I was very fortunate to survive, if I'm honest. Didn't do anything like insane, but you know, being young and in a warm environment and surrounded by all kinds of factors, you don't tend to make the best decisions. And so I hope I've learned from that years later. But so I lived in LA a little bit. I lived in Paris for a little bit, for a very brief amount of time. And I do like those cities. I lived in Boston for a few years. I do like all of those cities. All those cities have a lot to offer. They're beautiful in their own way. But, Chicago to me offers the perfect blend of a large city, four seasons. It's an amazing culinary city. It's definitely a place I would highly recommend if you love food. There's some fantastic restaurants here. Obviously, most people probably heard of Alinea. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, so my apologies if the owners of Alinea listen and they're shocked by my lack of. But it's a 3-star restaurant. There are other wonderful places here that are innovative, like Mutitong and others. And that part I enjoy very much, right? So it's a city that pushes that regard. It's a city that kind of still has a Midwestern heart, which is defined by the vast amounts of land that this place is surrounded by, kind of like the ability to absorb human emotion and just kind of be incredibly deep and allow you for some stillness. So it's not as crazy maybe as New York and LA, but it has 99%, in my opinion, at least, of what those cities offer, and maybe in some cases more. If you want a Greek bakery or a French bakery, or if you want to go to Chinatown, which is very substantial in size and has a lot to offer. I mean, to me, it has it all, and it's reasonable. I don't have to worry about paying $30,000 a month for like a good place to live, basically, like you would in New York or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's also important to me. Not even a matter of whether someone can afford. I'm sure some of your listeners can more than afford an extremely expensive condo in the middle of New York, right? Like, that's fine. But it's also what you're surrounded by. You want a diverse amount of people with different experiences. You want people that serve you coffee to be able to afford to live there. That's my viewpoint, right? You don't want them to commute 3 hours out of God knows where in order to give you something for barely scraping by, right? Whatever they may make. So that part, I think Chicago balances really well. It has its problems, let's be honest. The corruption has always been an issue ever since the beginning of time. It's not a new problem. Crime has been an issue for at least 100 years. We can go back and read headlines about Al Capone's gang shooting places up, and it's as if nothing has changed, right? Anyways, so it has its issues, but every place does. Nothing is ever going to be 100% perfect, and that's partly what gives you character.
All right, man, that's cool. Like, it's such a beautiful description you made. Like, it's really vivid, and I guess like few people could describe it as well. So, thanks for sharing that.
Well, have you ever had a chance to visit before? If you don't, I mean, I can find you.
I don't. I don't. I never got the chance. Like, so one of the places I want to visit in the U.S. one is Chicago, and also like the Northwest Coast. That's something I never did. I would love to see it, but yeah, maybe one day.
So I like the Miami move. We'll see how it goes. It's a new experience. It also shows the conference is willing to experiment. And I think that's important for our industry. We can't get too fixed, right? And I think that's been a problem for us.
Anyway, so I just want to learn, how did you get to domain names?
I think pure chance and luck, right? Well, That's not completely true, obviously, but some of it was. So me and Luke met, I want to say now, 26 years ago, roughly. So I moved in 1998, I believe. And now that we're going back 20 years, of course, I have to double check my memories. But, we met because I moved into the condo building. He was already living with his family, and I think we were in high school at the time. And so he was working on a bunch of stuff related to domain names and kind of the some other stuff. And so it was a very interesting industry because it was still more or less starting off. And, you know, you look at a sale of a domain name and it goes for some ridiculous amount, and it's not something you can even hold in your hand. You start to ask yourself questions, right? Like, yeah. What is this, how does this work? Why is it this way? And so this is how I got involved. And eventually, you know, I didn't get involved with Intellium, which didn't exist at the time. Estabot, I believe, was the first product Luke launched. And I want to say that was, boy, at least 12 years ago at this point. But, you know, I was kind of on the side observing the progress, and we would talk about domain names here and there. And eventually, I left the investment finance industry, which at the time I was kind of in wealth management. Mm-hmm. Survived the great financial crisis. I should get a medal for that, honestly. something like a purple heart, but it's an Excel spreadsheet, basically. A purple Excel spreadsheet.
Wow.
You know, and so he wanted to grow the business a little bit, not just Estabot, but specifically another service we offer, Domain IQ, in terms of research for domain names and IP addresses. And so I joined him more in full-time capacity, which is now almost 9 years ago, I believe. Also flew by, amazingly. And so that's how I got involved very directly in the industry. I was always kind of like on the side a little bit, observing things and observing his progress and his work. And once he had Domain IQ and was ready to grow it, that's kind of when I joined the team.
What did you think triggered like the launch of Domain IQ? Because you guys not only have Domain IQ, but recently you launched a lot of other tools like Domain Vaults and Domain Leads. There's like a bunch of stuff that maybe a lot of people don't know. So like, actually just kind of wanted to understand a little bit of the journey of the company. So like, you guys first started with Intellium, with Estabot. Then what happened afterwards? Like how the other products came about?
So eventually what started happening is people started asking questions. Like, for example, why did Domain IQ come to be? Is because when people started appraising domain names that they wanted to acquire, and some of them, they were thinking of buying for pretty substantial sums of money, you started to wonder, well, who owns this name? How do I go about making sure that I'm not just wiring money into the void, right? Like sometimes occurs in the industry, and then you see lawsuits. And so doing that type of research became very paramount. And there are other questions people are trying to solve. Like, for example, if you have a corporate domain name buyer, right, they also want to know, well, we want to monitor infrastructure. We want to also maybe look into potentially trademark infringing domains. And so eventually enough people started to ask questions. And eventually we kind of saw a market opportunity where, look, and we know that there were some excellent existing tools, right? So Domain Tools, I'll always say, is an excellent service. Because they've been around for a long time and they're pretty thorough. But at the same time, you know, they tend to be a little bit expensive. They may not be as responsive to the needs of the domain investors, maybe the smaller customers, right? Because understandably, every business is going to focus on maybe like the very top. And so we decided to launch the service. And initially, you know, it was more focused on domain investors than anyone else. And I guess our customer base over time started to shift a little bit more to the security industry. We started adding functions. And as you know, our industry is extremely chaotic. Even a simple Whois query can be an adventure. So all these things over time kind of layered in, and the services closer to what you see today, which includes monitoring functions, very in-depth research, whether it's IPv4 or IPv6, for example. So I'm sure in another 5 years or 10 years, it'll look even more complex than it is today just because of the way things are. So I hope that kind of in the roundabout way answers your question. And of course, there are services, right? There's dropping.pro that we have that focuses on expired domains. That's a strictly investor tool. And some of the things have been kind of change in popularity with time, some less and then become more, others more and become less, depending on changes in the industry, depending on how the expiring domain markets are, depending what other tools people launch. Think, you know, natural kind of changes in attrition that happen with services.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people in the industry use like Estibot, and you know, a lot of people also use Domainic U. But you guys have this full suite, for example, dropping.pro. I was actually not using it. I was not aware of it. So my question to you is, like, what do you think are the tools that investors are actually not using from your suite of tools, and they could be leveraged?
So dropping is a tool that I think more investors should potentially look at, especially since we do include some interesting data. One of the things that we don't always do very well is we leave a lot of Easter eggs. We let people figure out, we don't always market kind of the data. So domainleads.com, that's a part of Estibot, right? So it's not a standalone service you have to pay for. So if you have an Estibot account and you log into that, you can generate leads for develop domains in a specific keyword, right? So it works a little differently than a lead generator we have in Estibot. Perhaps in some cases, it's a better tool for lead generation, right? Not in every case, but, and so I feel like more people should use that. More people should play around and see if it makes sense for them. I think Domainic is underrated, to be honest, with domain investors. I think a lot of domain investors, they look up one or two domain names that they want to buy or they're targeting, but they're not thinking of their own portfolios. For example, we've seen a few cases recently of domain names being transferred, perhaps in less than, honest circumstances, if you will. So stolen domain names.
Yeah.
For various reasons, of course. And so why not monitor your own portfolio? Not the whole thing, just monitor domain names above a certain value. You know, if you have a three-letter.com, you should pay attention to it at all times. It's a valuable asset. You know, if I have land, for example, in America, and somebody kind of squats on it, you have a squatter, you have to kind of pay attention to these things, because there are certain laws that say they can take over by adverse possession, right? Because it's your duty as a landowner to make sure your land is properly cared for and that you continue to perfect your ownership, right? And I think domain names are similar to that. You have to... You can't just register something and then 5 years later, wait a minute, it's gone, right? Like, no, you have to constantly pay attention to that. So that's one area I would say domain investors should use Domainic U more.
Is there a tool like where you just actually control your portfolio based on Domainic U? You just upload your portfolio and get notifications?
So up to every account, for example, has its limitations, right? But for example, you say, I want to monitor 50 domain names for changes, right? And you upload those domain names into our monitoring tool. And our monitoring tool will constantly scan for possible changes. You can say, okay, create date, DNS, maybe some other, there's a number of characteristics, maybe all of them. If anything changes at all, I want to hear about it. And so an email goes out once a day, or you can check the monitoring tool via API. You can log into your account and check it, right? But an email does go out once a day. If an alert is triggered, again, check spam folder, of course, right? Well, basically, let's say you have five domain names that are combined net worth, or not net worth, but there goes my investment, say, worth of a million, right? You have five three-letter.coms, let's say, right?
Yeah.
You want to make sure nobody gets it from you. Because, I mean, let's be honest, incidents happen. I mean, sometimes registrars get hacked. Sometimes people figure out how to reverse engineer your identities to your data. All of our data is out there. We're all compromised, right? And so if you have something valuable, you have to keep track of it. That's I think, is a very underrated use of Domainic U. I mean, everything else kind of depends. There's a domain search tool that I think is excellent, but it is well used by at least the domain investors. They have it. It'll tell you what's registered and which extension based on the keyword. So I do see there's a domain search tool.
Got it.
And there's one kind of underrated part of it. You'll see there's a filter section. You can actually add filter based on the create date or length of characters. That field is a little hidden sometimes. Not everybody clicks on that. So if you're specifically looking for a keyword, let's say business, that was registered in the last 6 months, it's a very useful tool. It takes our zone file data. So on a daily basis. A lot of the TLDs, a lot of the extensions update their zones. So it takes that data and we add in some of the zones we try to reverse engineer, not on a daily basis, but on a fairly regular one, the ones that don't publish some files. And we try to basically keep it as complete as possible. It won't be 100% complete because of that. As you can imagine, that DE doesn't publish a zone, for example, right? You're not necessarily going to learn what resolves there, or I should say what's registered there on an hourly or daily basis, however zones are updated.
Mm. It's super cool. And also, like when we were talking just before the interview, I was actually playing with domain leads. It's super cool. I was not aware of the tool. And you can see all the developed domains for specific extensions. For example, you type whatever, like intellium.com, and then you can see all the domains that are actually developed and then, try to reach out to the owners if that's your intention. So that was like super useful and I was not aware of it. So you guys have a lot of this small Easter eggs that many users like don't know about. And one of the things that you actually share with me, which is also something that we use in the Liquid Marker report, which is the report we've been doing together since 2016. It's been 8 years now. Yeah, so one of the tools that they use from Intellium is NamePulse, which pretty much you want to talk about it. What is it?
So NamePulse is an interesting tool because what it is effectively is a crawl tool, right? So what we do every quarter, about 90 days, is we crawl over 300 million domain names in order to figure out what's developed. So for example, the data that feeds into domain leads, that's our data. We collect it. So we're not going out there to a third party.
Cool. That's awesome.
And relying on their services. And that has its advantages, obviously, because right now, the internet is in danger of possibly closing a little bit, closing down because of all the AI data collection and stuff like that. So we at least have some level of control over what we see. We can adjust the model. It carries its own challenges. Trying to figure out what's developed is not easy, right? Trying to figure out what truly has development value associated with the domain name. But so that's basically what NamePulse is. And it was born a few years ago. Basically, we were trying to figure out the answer to the question of, yes, your NTLD, let's say a random NTLD, has a lot of registrations, but what are the adoption rates? Are customers actually putting content on these domain names? And so that's how NamePulse came to be. And so that infrastructure now feeds into kind of different types of custom reporting we do and the data we feed to domain leads, basically. So that's kind of what NamePulse is. So it's actually a fairly complex system because we did the machine training, machine learning ourselves, and we constantly make adjustments to it. It's not an easy infrastructure kind of to manage, but I think it's quite worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's super interesting as a tool, especially when you look at whole extensions or the way we use it in the Liquid Marker report. Is pretty much we try to understand what is the percentage development of specific categories. And so with that, the higher the development percentage, the higher is the use of the domains, and so the less is the supply. So pretty much it's a measure of supply and demand. That also tells you about what is the future value of domain names. It has a sort of, some sort of predictive value as well. I remember back in the days where I was doing some presentations and one of the classes that was actually highly developed, but the prices were much lower than, let's say, trueletter.com or freeletter.coms was the truecharacters.com, like let's say like letter number combinations. And those ones were actually like priced very reasonably and like with time they actually become more expensive. And the reverse came true for other type of domains. For example, 5number.coms, they were like very expensive for some reason during the Chinese boom. But the development percentage was just so low. I think right now it's around 3%. It's just extremely low. And that tells you that there is not much end user demand for those type of domains. So it's purely more like speculative play. So looking at the data, just super interesting.
Yeah, it can be. And, with domain names, the other kind of factor to always consider is the actual supply of what's available.
Yes.
You know, and that kind of applies to a lot of other investments, right?
Yes. May not,
if you have very high concentrations of ownership, that price can move in either direction very, very quickly, right? If somebody has to liquidate their position, you're in trouble, right? If you're investing in this in that asset, if somebody can hold on to it to for long periods of time and can actually raise values, you know, homes are an example of that.
Yeah,
then you're doing well if you already own that property. So, you know, it's just one of the several factors to consider, but it is an important one. If it's being adopted, if it's being developed, there's organic demand for it, and that's extremely important.
Yeah. And actually, like, one of the cool things that maybe not so many people know is that when we started to do the liquid market report, one of the index that we consider was actually the concentration index, which was really, it's like the number of owners for the category of domains. And like some categories were more concentrated and others were like less concentrated. But then I think we removed that indicator because it was just crazy, the amount of domains under privacy. I was just very to understand who was the owner. So like at some point it became hard to measure that part. Anyway, so there is this product called DNIB.com. It's like a report. And one of the blog posts, I think they published in June, was saying that 90%, I think the data was taken over a sample, so I will not be reflective of the whole .com universe or like the whole domain industry, but like 90% of the ownership was under privacy. And that is like such a huge challenge for, you know, like both domain brokers and domain investors. And how do you guys deal with it? Like, how did you see also that changing over time?
That's a tough question, because I mean, it's hard to deal with that, right? Obviously, if you're in any kind of data analysis, to have such a vast amount of domain names under privacy, and that's not something obviously we can control, right? This is up to, I think, the registrar first in this instance, and also reflective of the laws that have been passed in various jurisdictions, and so. And so it's difficult to deal with. And I think it's made a lot of things harder, not just for us, but also for people that passed those laws. Because what is a lot harder to do now is investigating criminal activity, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And so occasionally we do have law enforcement customers and they're in various jurisdictions. And, you know, they have complained about it. But hey, look, if your jurisdiction passed that law and you're struggling with the after effects of that law, then, you know, it would have had to have been considered by you at the time, right? So there's not much to say about that. You could look at other possible factors. I mean, organization names. So some domain investors still kind of try to go around the system, for example, right? And they will put some detail in the organization name. So I'm guessing that 90% number is not maybe necessarily what the actual number is. If I had to guess, it's probably closer to 70%, but it's just my personal guess. You could look at historical records as well. Those are a little dicey. They could be outdated. They may not exist. You could look at other factors like IP addresses. You can look at Google IDs, right? People will Google IDs too, and then it becomes obvious who the owner is, things of that nature. So there are crumbs occasionally that knock that number down, but it's no question it's incredibly difficult to deal with. An unknown, right? A great unknown, because you don't really understand the motivations or who the party is on the other side and what the winning negotiation strategy may be if you're a domain investor.
Yes.
And I think that's actually a bad thing. And the reason I think that isn't just because I want those records, right? Because let's be honest, I do, right? As someone who works in domain IQ, yeah. I want as much information as possible. So I'm not a biased source. But at the same time, if you look at crypto, right, why was crypto so incredibly successful so far? It's because it's transparent. You can see where all the movements are. You can even analyze how concentrated something is. Information, you know, I think our industry has not benefited from secrecy, partly because, yes, you may be able to protect your moat. But if the overall pie is smaller, you're still going to make less money in the long run. There's a reason why option markets are more or less transparent. There's a reason why the biggest markets in the world, you can figure out where things are moving. It's because ultimately that's not the deciding factor in the success of an industry. In fact, transparency is one of the deciding factors. If I can see and analyze and understand how this moves, I'm more likely to invest in this thing.
Right? Yes.
I'm more likely to put my money there, because then it becomes a question, can I interpret the data correctly? Am I smart enough to understand the dynamics? Not whether or not this is a black hole and I'm just rolling the dice, right? And yeah. I think that part will be probably hurt our industry a little bit. This is why I'm always a big proponent of publishing sales data. People should see what you sell for. And if it embarrasses you because you sold too low, raise your prices next time, right? You've also learned something. Or if you feel like something is off, then fine. But let people kind of analyze it, shed light on it, and therefore attract investment capital into this part. It's just, that's my personal view. I know people disagree with it, but that's what I think. So
I think it's spot on. So one of the things that actually impressed me when I came to Dubai is that, you know, I actually really love the real estate as a market as well. And here, pretty much every transaction, you can see it minute by minute on the blockchain. You can see every transaction, like how much like an apartment went for, how much it's rented for. You can track any sort of price in all the city. And that gives so much transparency, and transparency gives confidence to investors. And they went through as well, like, you know, they went through like the great financial crisis, like they had that period in which they had a lot of scams, but like they fixed the system in a way that it's super transparent now. And look at what it, you know, and I'm just looking out the window and it's like, oh, these skyscrapers that were not here 20 years ago. 20 years ago, it was just like a moat, and that was it. But I do see also like the other side. I do also like see the arguments of domain investors. And I was speaking with someone, like I don't think he wished to share like we was, but like he was telling me that there's a lot of sales data, for example, for CCTLDs, but like nobody really shares it because like people who invest, domain investors who invest in CCTLDs, you know, it's just such a small market that if they were to publish the data of like what sells, they will probably be not as profitable anymore. And you might say, yeah, probably it's like a tragedy of the commons, like, you know, like the whole industry and the whole market suffers from it. But I can see like as everyone is trying to maximize their own utility function by,
I understand that, but I'll posit this question to them. I mean, let's say if I go back to 1900 or 1890, right, to where I am now, which is not far from the lake. And say, look, all these used to be single mansions, right? All of them, right? And there was fewer of them. But now I look out, they're entire towers of condominiums, right?
Right.
And in terms of value, in terms of economic movement, in terms of dollar amounts, in terms of everything, everything is bigger. Everything is better, right? And so, sure, maybe the market may become difficult. But then you sell, let's say, for example, you could sell shares in a single domain name there, right? Like there are ways to securitize and monetize markets in ways that perhaps we don't even know yet. How many of us thought that crypto would take off 20 years from now? Most of us probably didn't even have any idea, right? The concept may not have been born yet. And so the market changes and adapts and evolves, but it can't do so in the dark. It's very difficult to do that in the dark. Right. And I think that I understand those concerns. I get it. Let's say I may not be able to hand register, or I may not be able to snipe expired domain names. But you can't tell me that you can't figure out a way to make more money as the first mover in a TLD. Right. Mm-hmm. Especially if that TLD kind of blows up in popularity and becomes extremely productive. Right. As the first mover, you should have the first shot. Right. And then you kind of have to ask that type of question. I don't know. That's my view, right? I could be 100% wrong, and I'm willing to admit it if I am. Somebody presents it.
I think it's like an individual, like game theory type of thing. And from the people I've talked to at the conference, I think there's kind of a desire for products that kind of tracks domain names more as an NFT. And probably I think some of them are coming to market soon. And I also really like the idea of just being able to fractionalize domain names. And I think probably that would be coming soon as well. Now, I also understand from just the purely like behavioral perspective of like a single domain investor that it might be thinking like, look, I've been doing relatively well for a long time. And if I stuck into this CCTLD, I don't really like change. I like to have my 1% separate and get X amount per year. So I can see like the resistance to change. Although I also agree with you that definitely that's like a big obstacle to the industry becoming bigger than what it is.
Yeah, it's basically a guy that holds a whole bunch of land in a very prime location and he doesn't want to sell it to developers because he's afraid that once they do, he's not going to have that land anymore, right? But the truth is, in terms of the industry, I feel, grain of salt, is partly is why crypto blew right past domain names in terms of digital assets. Domain names should have been at the very front of digital asset revolution, and they were not because people were too busy keeping strategies private. And guess what? Yes, you've protected yourself, but how many millions of dollars have you possibly left on the table as a result, right? I mean, just look around at how many billions of dollars were invested in the crypto industry. So that's my argument. Yeah, and yes, it is saying like, look, we don't know what those numbers would have been. This is speculative. I can look at another digital asset right in front of me and see how that industry is developing and new products and new things constantly coming out. There's a lot of failure, obviously. There's good levels of fraud as anything that just starts out. Anything that just starts out is going to have these things. But they've clearly are pushing forward and we should have been there and we're not quite there. And I hope we will get there one day.
Yeah. You know, like I was on this panel with a few people at the conference Domain Days. There was like Monte Khan, which is like one of the guys who actually started the aftermarket. And we're just discussing about like, you know, what is actually the size of the aftermarket? Because, you know, people say that 90% of transactions are undisclosed, so they're private. But there are like some proxy we can use. And one, for example, is the data released by escrow.com, which is the whole, you know, pretty much the whole volume of sales that they release every quarter. And that you can see because escrow.com is owned by freelancer.com, which is like a public listed company. Also, you can see the GoDaddy aftermarket data, which I think you can see it's around the aftermarket revenue. I think it's around like 100 million per quarter. Very similar to escrow.com, like the data that they release, probably like, you know, you see something like around 100 million per quarters in aftermarket. So when you talk about what is actually the size of the aftermarket as a whole, then I would say like a good proxy guess, it's between like 1 billion to 2 billion per year. And if you look at that, it's like what? I think the Burj Khalifa, like the building year, cost 1.5 billion just to build. So it's like, you know, after all, it's a very, very small industry in terms of like numbers. And yeah, definitely it has been eclipsed by crypto in terms of volume and what it is.
Right. But crypto started out really small, right, too?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you can go back 10, well, maybe not 10 years, let's be realistic, but even like, as far as like 7 or 5 years, and the amounts are way smaller than they are today, right? So there's no reason that 1 or 2 billion has to stay that way, that it could go much higher. But again, to do that, you have to implement the same things that a lot of the other markets have. Mm. A lot of markets that even you go back, like oil didn't used to be traded in the way that it is now, right? You didn't have all these options and markets for it, right? But to effect change, one of the things you must absolutely have in an industry's confidence, which comes from transparency. Mm. Right? It doesn't eliminate, you know, but again, we can harp on that for a really long time. Yeah. And I have, but I think the blueprint is always there. And I think it'll be there for some time. But eventually, you know, all things evolve and kind of pass you by. So I hope this industry in general does take kind of the right approach to things. That's my hope.
All right, man. All right. I mean, so I would love to talk about so many other things and maybe we can take it offline at some point. But so I think it's a time.
Or is that too? Plus, you know, you don't want to be staying up to like 3 in the morning trying to edit stuff. And then, you know, we can always do another one if people like it or not. You know, we can always, there are plenty of things to talk about, both on the personal level and that. We are working on some new things at Intellium as well that could be interesting. I'm not ready really to kind of dive into them yet. We're still testing them, but I think some of the domain, at least the domain investors, I hope will like them. We'll see. So there will be more things to talk about in the future.
No, man, I'm super excited to hear that. And also, like, there's a graph you share with me that is with pretty much the whole crawl of name parts for the whole .com category. And it was like super interesting. But if we go into it, it's going to be like another rabbit hole. So maybe we keep it for episode two or like, you know, we just, but it's just crazy. Like I love this kind of stuff. Anyway, man, it's always good to chat. And I guess I'll catch up with you soon.
Absolutely, man. I hope to see you in Chicago at some point. And I do owe you a trip to Dubai. I will do my best to try to make it out there, man. I do need to find time.
Yeah, it's on public record, guys. No, you said it. All right, man. Talk later.
You said it.